nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here?
Nothing to see, nothing to see, nothing to see, nothing to see.
You are listening to Nothing to See Here, a program of experimental radio produced at NASCAD University. This episode is entitled Underground.
You know, as a kid, I was the guy who always liked to play hide and seek. I loved playing hide and seek. And I was really good at it. I was the guy who was like, you know, I'd find myself getting into all the weird spaces and nobody'd be able to find me because I'd find all these like weird little places in which I could kind of squeeze in, like a closet or get between two kind of walls or, you know, squeeze into a car. I'm kind of small as well, so it kind of helped. And, you know, maybe that's part of it. I liked finding a space that I could kind of crawl into. And I guess it was about 5 years ago, you know, I had a new wife and, you know, we just had our first kid and my job was going pretty well. But one day I was doing some yard work and I just started digging and something in me was just like, man, just keep digging. And, I'd go out and I'd just dig all day. And I initially told my wife, you know, it's just good exercise. You know, it's just full body and make me feel stronger. But it wasn't that. I knew that I got really into this hole. Digging. And I'd spend like days. I'd come home from work and I'd just go out to the backyard and I'd just dig. It got really deep and, you know, it was kind of a joke in the house.
Yeah, you know, Brent is a hole that he's digging.
Yeah, but I got really into this hole and, you know, I would go and sit in the hole and just sit there and, man, it was just my happy place or whatever. And, yeah, so that was, you know, that happened and, I would go there quite a lot and it got a little weird. My wife went away for this, you know, like 4 weeks or something like that. And I just like, I'm going for it. And I just like really got into digging and I like went even further and further and further. Eventually I got down really, really far. And there was this one time when I realized there is just no going back. Like literally I could not get out of this hole and I wasn't worried. I just kept digging. Digging. And then there was this moment where I felt like I wasn't digging to get away from anything. I was digging to go somewhere. And it's hard to explain. But at that point, you know, like I just got this energy. And I was just like digging and digging and digging. And then I came across like, you know, the wall just crumbled and suddenly I was in this other space and there was like I was in another tunnel and like I broke through And I realized, you know, it dawned on me, like, of course, like, I'm not the only person digging. There's, a lot of people who are digging holes like mine. You know, there's something really primal about it. It wasn't a weird feeling. It's like, everybody must have this feeling. And I find myself in this world. And there's a whole other side of humanity who's decided to go into the hole.
I've been living in the sewers for about, how long has it been? I want to say 8 years. There was the attraction because I knew some people who were living in the sewers, and they had said great things about it. There are no cops in the sewer, there's a lot of space. I've always been a night owl, so I was quite excited about the prospect of living in an eternal gloom. The lack of light, you lose track of time, and as a result, you don't really know when was the last time that you went above ground. And even further than that, you then do get some people who are kind of weird to talk to, because their sense of time has really just deteriorated. So their talk about things that they did tomorrow, I mean, that's cool, like, I can get down with that, that's trippy, but I don't really know how they go about their day.
I mean, the tunnels, what's great is, like, if I walk down the right tunnel, I can walk for, like, kilometers and not see anyone. If I want to, I could never, well, maybe I could never see anyone again. The first night was, like, cold and you're a little bit scared, and, like, it takes a while to get used to the dark. And also to feel safe in the tunnels. The first time being in a hole feels a little bit weird, and, like, you're not sure what the etiquette is, too, and, like, when you see other people, it's, like, can be quite alarming when you're not expecting it. You don't follow, like, normal sleeping cycles either. Like, you just sleep until you're satisfied and then wake up. It's not like you're following the sun like everyone else. And I mean, it's confusing when I go out and, like, resupply, because I'll come out and it'll be, like, 3 a.m. and everything's shut down, and, like, that's kind of annoying. But other than that, it's not too bad. I mean, I guess my eyes are probably more used to being in the dark, And my ears, like, my hearing becomes, like, much more sensitive because it is much quieter. I guess that would be with any quiet space, right? Like, the more time you spend in it, the more, like, your ears are attuned to it. I hear, like, a pretty constant, like, dripping. It's kind of calming. And it echoes as it falls. And then I hear just kind of like the air moving through the tunnels too, slowly. Kind of like wafting through and sometimes whistling.
The sewer is an interesting place because it's very wet, but it doesn't feel clean. All the water is kind of oily, and it sticks to your fingers in a very sort of nauseating way. I mean, living in the sewer can get quite stressful. You have to contend with a lot of other mouths to feed. You have rats, you have other, you know, sewer people. Sometimes you have teens who go down there to explore, which is always kind of awkward because they come down and they think that it's all just kind of a game, which is all right. That's also how I sort of ended up in the sewer as well. It's a stressful and loud environment down there. There's always water dripping. It's like every sense is really excited. It smells quite a lot, as you might imagine.
I was living in this apartment. It's this long, it was a house that had been turned into like an apartment essentially. So like this long hallway with like 9 doors on both sides, and at the very end there's a kitchen and a bathroom. And I was living in that apartment. There wasn't a moment where I couldn't hear someone around me. Like, I'd hear my roommates bumping around in the rooms beside me, or like I'd walk down the street and there'd just always be people there, and that was really shocking to me. And I was really uncomfortable for a long time. And then once I moved into the cave, that discomfort left and my thoughts were more clear. And I was working construction above ground. I was a sign guy, essentially. I just help a sign for the road and told people to stop. It's like the most absurd job ever. Like, they could just put a sign up, essentially, and I would be fine. I wouldn't need to be there, but they insist on someone being there to, like, turn the sign around every once in a while. And I was trying to have, like, some purpose in my life. I knew I could keep doing what I was doing and become successful at what I was doing, but it just wasn't what I wanted. It was just too much.
So when I was growing up, we moved around from place to place, country to country, province and states, depending on where we were going to. My dad was setting up, at the beginning of his career, was setting up or just working as a chemical engineer, designing paints and dyes and explosives. So I think I figured out one time that in 12 school years, I'd been to 9 schools, maybe 10. We can never keep anything permanent. We always had to move, so everything was transient in our lives. So, 6 kids, 2 adults, 2 rooms. So, we were always building temporary things because we didn't want to give them up. So, tree forts were temporary. They weren't big, elaborate ones you could live in. And we'd gotten pretty good at building underground or partially underground enclosures or things over our stream in Vancouver. So we moved to Beau Repaire, Beaconsfield in Quebec, West Island outside of Montreal. We had a new constructed house, and we were one house away from this large, what used to be pastures. And they'd used the fields to dump all the building materials into it. So they had, you name it, skids, wood, trees. So we took one and looked at one of these piles one day, and we decided that we could make this our fort. So we started digging operation into the fort, make it under these pile of garbage. So we were extracting work. And at that time, our favorite film was The Great Escape, where they used to sneak all the dirt out in their pants. So we were sort of mimicking that, moving it so nobody could realize what we were doing. We'd walk it over to a different area and dump it. We finally got this thing built. It was big enough that we could actually sit upright in it. We could get about six of us in there. We found carpet from the garbage piles, and we put carpet at the floors. And then we hit the entrance pretty much like a badger hole. We would scoot down in this thing. So it was sort of our, you know, we didn't tell anybody we had it. It was our whatever, just our hideout. Well, one time my dad was really pissed at me for some, I don't know what. I think maybe I tried to set the house on fire by mistake, burned the curtains down or something. So I took off and I went running in the fields. I dove into the fort and I closed the door so you couldn't see. It just looked like a thing. So I could see out. We had little periscopes and peek holes. We could see what was going on around us. And he's like pacing around trying to figure out where the hell I went, kicking my stuff on top of my stuff. I'm under there going, ah, he's never going to find me. So it became my regular hiding spot. Whenever trouble was abreast at the home, I would scoot into the fields and then I'd hide in there, which was a great plan until one night we accidentally lit the entire thing on fire, 25 acres, grass fire. Yeah, it was. We couldn't stop it. It was spreading in every direction. You see pictures of fires that sort of spread out in a circle. Well, this is exactly what was going on. Four fire trucks later, in about 8 hours, they finally put the thing out. But at that point, our structure and our new structure, which we were building, a larger one inside, further into the woods, were no longer accessible and burned to the ground. End of living underground.
The first time I ever went in the sewer was because my grandparents lived right by a golf course. So me and my sister, we would often go and play in the golf course. We would like collect balls that had gone into the woods and sell them back to the golfers. And this one time we were going about looking for golf balls, and we were down by a river. And we followed the river all the way down to a sewer tunnel. And there was this big, ginormous tunnel. So we were pretty excited, and we were running through, and we were splashing in the drainage, and we were having a grand old time, and we were picking up golf balls and rolling them off the sides of the corrugated metal and watching them as they span down into the sewer itself. I just remember looking up at the canopy from inside the tunnel, and the outside world suddenly felt so far away, and I felt so comfortable, like I was just peeping at the world from a sort of hidden, protective space.
Yeah, how do I feel my day? Well, I love, exploring the tunnels. So I have to, as I'm exploring, I have to make sure I make a good map, otherwise I can get lost. So as I'm going, I'm, drawing out the different areas and, checking all these tunnels to make sure. And if there's often, from the construction, there's still kind of, markers so that people wouldn't get lost. So there's, random numbers. So you write down those numbers to make sure that you remember which way you're coming back. So I found that really interesting, and, old first aid kit that had been completely molded and some old clothing and stuff. So I found that really interesting and old first aid kit that had been completely molded and like some old clothing and stuff. So yeah, it's just kind of fun to find like the remnants of that. It's always fun to find like rusty and like moldy stuff, even though it's probably not even that old. It's probably like 5-10 years old, but I think it's the thought that no one else has been there for a long time that is interesting.
There's no lack of privacy in the sewer. In fact, there are people in the sewer who I know are there, because I'll sometimes hear them walking or brushing their teeth or murmuring to themselves in the dark, but I've actually never met them. And from all I know, no one's met them. So we'll sometimes leave provisions for those people at certain junctions of different sewer grates. And then they will be gone. So we do know that there are people out there who we actually haven't had any contact with. That being said, I think that, like astronauts, people who live in the sewers have to become accustomed to what is ultimately an inhospitable environment. For instance, in the sewer, there's a lot of bacteria. It's dark most of the time, and it's almost disgusting.
A spot in the French Alps about 40 miles from Nice was in world headlines. It was the entrance to the pothole down which went a Republican Guard sergeant to bring up the young woman who had been below for 88 days. The object of her exercise was to study the effects of loneliness, information which she hopes will be of use to astronauts. To get Josie Law back to the surface was a difficult and complicated business, taking over 3 hours. All the world wanted to see the first picture of the 26-year-old midwife at the end of her self-imposed stay underground. Apart from great fatigue brought on by coming up to the surface, Josie seemed little worse than when she went down before Christmas. As she was put on a stretcher, she had a sprig of her favorite flower, mimosa. The plan now was to take her to Nice for a quick medical check, and then to Paris to test how her mind and body had stood up to prolonged incarceration. If the resulting data helps astronauts, Josie will be proud to have been a guinea pig in space exploration. Her boyfriends hope it'll be for the last time.
I honestly don't talk to too many people. Like, I know there is like some traders that I could resupply with instead. But I mean, the whole point of me going to this area was to have some like silence. And also, I mean, that's the main reason why I like being underground too, is like the solidarity of it, and the silence. People don't trust you if they know that you live in the tunnels too. Like, they assume that you're like this crazy drug addict that's like gonna murder people. And more often than not, it's a sensible person. I could say there's a lot of unsensible things that are happening outside of the tunnel too, right? And I'm fine with like above ground people. They're totally cool, and like this is just kind of what I want. And I don't know if it'll be a long thing either. Like, I think once I become an old man, it's not going to be as appealing. So I'm going to have to like move back out and find a new way of living. Yeah, it's kind of becoming like a popular like thing. Like, I think a lot of people post on Instagram about how great their underground life is, but they only post like the things that are like good looking. They don't post all the other stuff, like being really cold and wet all the time, and like having to resupply and like that kind of stuff. They just post like nice photos of the water coming down to the bottom of the cave or something like that.
I sometimes dream that I'm looking out of the sewer grates at my friends and family as they walk down the street. Or sometimes I imagine that I'm in like air ventilation shafts and I'm looking out onto the office where I used to work. And sometimes I even imagine that I'm just like a plane of glass. And people are walking past me and they're seeing right through me, but I can see them. But sometimes when I'm, you know, close enough to the surface, I'll feel the rumble of footsteps above me, or cars passing over the grate, or I'll hear the flapping of the wings of birds. And if you put your hand against the wall of the sewer, you can actually feel this trembling. And it sort of feels like you're there, or that these trembles are reverberating through you and sort of bringing you to life. And sometimes I try and like walk in step with the people who are on the street above me, kind of miming out their actions and pretending like I'm talking to somebody beside me, sort of living a street life. And in those moments, I really do feel like I know something about those people that maybe they don't even know. They think they're just walking about their lives, but maybe I'm actually the one controlling them.
You have been listening to Nothing to See Here, a program of experimental radio produced at Nesked University. This episode was entitled Underground. It features the voices of David Clark, Aidan McMahon, Devin Chambers, and Michael Day. The sound design and mixing were by Aidan McMahon. Nothing to See Here is produced by David Clark at NASCAD University. For more episodes, please search for Nothing to See Here Radio on SoundCloud.com.